Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Kathleen. Is that good? Hi, everybody. I'm Kathleen, and I am an alcoholic. Hi. I've got read this, but I'm not going to read that. I'm grateful to be here. I'm a little emotional speaking to the mic. Is that better? Okay, I'll speak into the mic. A little emotional. There's something about coming to the Lana Group to speak, I will tell you. And I think it has so much to do with not only the crowd. It's probably about my fifth time speaking here at the Atlantic Group. It has something to do with the love of service here at the Atlantic Group. You know, there's so many people in this room that I've done service with in my 33 years almost of sobriety. And it touches my heart when I come in here because I'm greeted by so many people. My sponsee said to me tonight, God, you know so many people. And I feel like this disease has a way of holding us by the grip and says to us, you know nobody. And when I'm home by myself, I feel so lonely. And then I go to a meeting like this and I feel, her words, like a rock star. It's not how I feel inside, but it's how I feel if I come to an AA meeting, and it's how I feel when I do service. So thank you, Atlantic Group, for having me. Thank you, Jane, so much for asking me. And thank you for all my friends out here that are here. I am a drunk, fall down, drag down drunk. And I love so many stories in this room because I'm the drunk of the age that Ava and I talk about. I am a drunk of platform shoes and big hair. It was really important for me as a drunk, even, you know, in the 80s. The nails were done, the hair was done, and if the shoes look good, if I can get the makeup on, life was okay. I mean, in my mind, life was okay. Bills weren't paid. I felt so bad inside, but life was okay. There was still that $20 in the bra that could get me out of the bar and home, so life was okay. And that's how I lived my life. You know, a lot of times through the 70s and the 80s, life was okay because I could just get home. And if I could get home, I could sleep it off, and maybe tomorrow, and maybe tomorrow, and maybe tomorrow, and maybe tomorrow. And, you know, it wasn't a long, long, horrible story, but there were incidents. You know, there were those times. But there were times that I could cover up enough. You know, there were an emergency room visit. You know, there was a seizure at the Mad Hatters on 2nd Avenue with an ambulance and a blind date that I never saw again. There was a trip to Florida. I don't remember with who or how I got there. There were things like that that happened. You know, sitting at an airport in Miami Beach trying to get home, you know, things that happened that I would look back 2 days later and go, wasn't that funny? Or try to say, wasn't that funny? But inside of me, that's how I lived with the inside of me. But what I wanted you to know was, wasn't that funny? Wasn't that funny? And if you called me up at my workplace, I worked in a recording studio, so you know, wasn't that funny was okay, because I worked in an industry that seemed to be okay. What are you doing this weekend? I don't know, it's Fire Island or Betty Ford. Haven't decided. You know, wasn't that funny? You know, but it wasn't, you know. And it was 1986. I had been, it was the 80s, and so I had been going to one guru after the other, because that's what you did in the 80s, on somebody else's money. I'd been married and divorced, lived up in Westchester for a while, did that, came back to the city, trying to find out a way to figure out my life. So it had to be a guru, because, I don't know, or another husband, and I couldn't find either one. So I went to California to the Mojave Desert, because this was a healer and a guru. And for 2 weeks, I was in L.A. before I went, and I was on a binge in L.A. with a friend of mine there. And when I got to the Mojave Desert, I was really in bad shape. And I met Brew Joy, who was the guru and the healer, and for 2 weeks, no drinking, no drugging, no meat. I was healed. I ran with the wolves. I bathed in spring water. I wore white linen. I even got tan, and I don't tan. You know, I was really sure that this was it. Then I got to the airport at the Mojave Desert and went to San Francisco, and at the airport at the Mojave Desert, they were telling us to be careful on the reentry, the reentry, the reentry. I, you know, I'm from New York. I don't need to reenter, you know. Other people were from, you know, I'm fine. A couple of vodkas later, I got to the hotel in San Francisco, and I never left. I was meeting a client the next morning. I had breakfast with her in the lobby of the hotel. I did a business deal with her for a job. I went back up to my room, and I was there for 5 days. And it was the ships sailing in New York. It was the big ships in New York in July 4th weekend, and I stayed at a hotel in San Francisco and drank like I had never drank before. I'd never done that. And I got home, and during all of this stuff, I'd met this woman, you know, and these weekend workshops that I'd done when I was trying to find myself. And she told me in the bar at a hotel room that she had been in recovery. And she told me her story one night sitting at the Doral Hotel bar. And I thought, this poor lonely woman, you know. She told me her story, told me she was a heroin addict and a recovering alcoholic. And I thought, this poor thing, you know. And I listened to her, and I thought she was just lonely or maybe gay. And she wanted me, because didn't everybody? I mean, I was, you know. I mean, what were we thinking, you know, half the time? So anyway, that woman knew that I was going on this retreat for 2 weeks, and when I got to the airport at Kennedy on a Saturday morning after a red eye, I had taken vodka with me on the plane. It was in my bag, and I was, as my mother would identify my father, I was ossified. My feet were swollen. I had my shoes in my hand because they couldn't fit on my feet. And I was waiting for my luggage. And I called her up. And I said, I think I'll go to one of those meetings. And she said, now? And I said, oh, no, no, no. I just came back from a business trip. I was drunk as a skunk. So that week she asked me not to drink, and I tried not to. And I lasted until Thursday. And I was with a friend who was in from Philly, and we went to a Neil Diamond concert, and I started drinking that night with her, and we took her little boy, and we ended the night at the Tavern on the Green, because I was a big shot with somebody else's credit card, and her little boy was sleeping, so we put the two chairs together at the Tavern on the Green so he could sleep while his mother and I got drunk. And I dropped her off at her hotel with her sleeping baby. And he was probably 6 at the time, or 7. I mean, what were we doing taking a kid to a Neil Diamond concert at Madison Square Garden? But that's what drunken women do, because, you know, we wanted to go. I dropped them off, and I stopped at the deli on York Avenue, and I picked up 2 cans of beer and a pack of cigarettes, because that's what my drinking had gotten to, where I couldn't possibly go home without the 2 cans of beer and a pack of cigarettes, because just the idea of not having it, I had an anxiety attack for the anxiety attack. I was terrified for the terror. So I woke up on July 18th of 1986 on the floor of my living room, which is not unusual. I woke up on the floor a lot. I stopped going into bed because I didn't want to mess it up unless somebody had to come in and get me. It happened. The police came in. Fire department had been called. Incidents like that, you know, that I could erase in my mind because they weren't that bad. They just weren't that bad. So that day I came to my first AA meeting, and I met this lovely woman who sat in that bar with me and listened, and I listened to her story. And she took me to my first AA meeting, and I haven't had a drink since. Now, that morning when I got up on the floor of my living room, I did say, please help me. I don't know who I said that to precisely, but I did say, please help me. I don't want to do this anymore. And I got to tell you, I haven't had a drink since. And I was a dearly fall-down drunk. So there's something to this. Thank you. You know, I grew up with drunks. Both parents drank. And I always say that I grew up in a house that, you know, my artwork wasn't on the refrigerator door. I was number 5 of 5. And by the time I came along, as what they didn't need was another kid, you know, another mouth. There was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of poverty. My father was a compulsive gambler in addition to being a drunk. And my mother was a depressive. So, you know, we grew up, you know, with a lot of that. But there were also a lot of fun stories. My father was a very funny man. And we had a lot of stories going on, a lot of humor in the house, a lot of discipline. My mother was from Ireland. There was a lot of discipline in the house and a lot of God. And so it was confusing. You know, on one hand, shut up, go in the room, be quiet. On the other hand, you know, come out and have a cup of tea and let Mama tell you a story. You know, so it was like, so safety was not something I ever grew up with. Safety was not something I knew till I got here. I got to tell you, you know, and I didn't understand that. And I started going to a 7:15 early morning meeting, not because I made that decision. I just had nothing to do in the morning, and I was pacing. I had about 5 days of sobriety, and I called my sponsor up. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I've already had a pot of coffee and a pack of cigarettes. I have a pack of cigarettes, and I'm now pacing. And she said, there's a 7:15 meeting at the 79th Street Workshop between 2nd and 3rd, 1st and 2nd Avenue, upstairs at the, you know, Hungarian Literary Society. Go there. So I went there, and Dominic was there putting the chairs together, and I was terrified. And I walked in, and he said, come here. And I said, no. But that, because that was my reaction to everything. I was defiant, and I was angry, and my reaction was no. And I said, okay. And I went, and I helped him put the chairs together. And I didn't leave that meeting because the women were so kind when they walked in, and they were nice to me. So I started going there, and that became my group every morning. For close to 20 years, I went there every morning. And those women mothered me in a way that I'd never been mothered, in a way that I needed to be mothered, in a way that I didn't even know I needed to be mothered. You know, I just had no idea. You know, Red used to stay at the workshop, I didn't know I didn't know. I didn't know I didn't know. You know, I remember walking in, and this is a story for beginners, you know. I remember walking in, my sponsor always gets a kick out of this one. I walked into the 6:15 at the 79th Street Workshop. You know, I was probably about a month and a half sober. Mitch may remember this. This is what we used to do. Walk in just a few minutes late, you know, high heels on, flipping the hair, clicking the heels, you know, and walking to my seat, and I sit down next to my sponsor. And she turns around and she says to me, you know you're not in a bar, right? And I was like, what? So offended. And she said, you know, you can take the girl out of the bar, but sometimes you can't take the bar out of the girl. So we're going to need to work on that. And I was offended. I got offended by everything everybody tried to teach me. I got offended when she said to me, you should read the big book. And I opened it up and it says, you know, fever ran high in New England town. I'm not reading this, I said. I don't relate to this. Fever ran high. And so she, in the kindness of her heart, read to me chapter 3 of the big book, more about alcoholism. Somehow I shared with her, and I don't remember. You know how that is when you open your mouth and something comes out and you go, God, I didn't mean to share that. Something intimate, something that you didn't even know was a secret until you share it. And that's when you learn what intimacy really is, when you have a sponsor and you start to share things. And I said something about not having had bedtime stories as a kid. So she would read to me the first three chapters of chapter three of the big book, more about alcoholism, so I could relate because I was so defiant. And that's what I heard at night before I went to bed, was Doreen reading the first three chapters of the big book. That kind of care and that kind of, you know, tenderness, I didn't know. And I don't know that I could ever be that sponsor to my sponsees, but I got to tell you, that kind of care that happens in AA is so special, and I was the one who was lucky enough to get it here. And that's why I think that I sit here with almost 33 years and have not picked up a drink. Because it's not that I don't think about it. I tell you, I still look at movies and TV shows, and I could smell the scotch. I could smell the scotch. I was a drunk. There was no doubt about it. I could smell the scotch. I look at drinks go by in restaurants, and I watch people drink wine and go, why are they not drinking it? You know? I know. And I still wanted to know, what does flavored tequila taste like? You know, I think about these things. This is not what normal people do. You know, I don't think this is what normal people do. So there were things that I needed to learn, and there was things that she was able to teach me. You know, I was fortunate enough to be taken to retreats when I was a beginner. She took me to my first retreat with her sponsor. And she said things to me that I just thought were incredible. You know, I would walk home on First Avenue, and I was sure I was going to get sucked into a bar on First Avenue. And she said to me, you know, in the history of the world, I don't know of anybody that's gotten sucked into a bar, but it could possibly happen to you, Kathleen. It could possibly happen to you. So my suggestion would be that you should cross the street. I thought she was brilliant. And she was. She knew everything there was to know, because she had 2 years of sobriety. You know, I mean, 2 years seemed like such a long time, right? And she was the smartest person I knew. And things like that, you know, like, Kathleen, do your laundry today, and why don't you fold it? You know, Kathleen, go there and show up on time. You know, things like that. And she called me things like dear and sweetheart and things that I didn't hear in my life, you know. And so I say this to you to say to you, be kind to your sponsees. You know, I love my sponsees. I got to tell you how much I love my sponsees because, you know, and I always say this, that in the service of others, I found myself. And I found myself, my second sponsee, Doreen moved away, and we're very close, and we meet on Wednesday night for a prayer meeting because she's very ill right now. And my second sponsee was Miss Edie, who we had, and she said to me, she's a Southern Baptist woman from up in Harlem, and she said to me, I'm not going to the movies with you, so don't call me, I'm not your friend. That was it. And she was all about the third and the 11th step and about doing service. And what she showed me was her belief in God was so big. At that point, I knew that I had a power that was greater than myself, but I didn't have a real God in my life that I truly, truly loved. And in the 26 years that she sponsored me, I learned to love a God that I didn't even know I could love in a way that I love God now. And I learned it from her, watching how this woman loved her higher power and loved God. And she took me to church uptown. She took me to, we did a few things together in that way. But, you know, I got to do that. And what she showed me through her compassion was I got to be unafraid to get more honest. You know, I got to be safe. And when we teach our sponsees to be safe, they get to be more honest. And I truly believe that if we give it out in the world, it comes back. And what comes back is the truth. and the truth is what heals us. And I got to tell you, it's not easy. You know, this whole human experience has not been easy for me. This whole sober thing has not been easy. You know, I'm still fighting and screaming, and there's still days that I want to slap somebody, you know, but I don't do it. I don't do it. And I was just talking, you know, to Jennifer, who is so sweet and so kind, who's been hospitality and been helping me today, you know, that what I don't do is react. How did I learn that? I learned it here. You know, this whole idea of, my mother used to say, count to 10 before you hit your brother. And I remember that. That was, and don't bother me unless there's blood. Those were her two things. She was one of the most compassionate women in the world, you know. But, you know, I'm finally learning how to put that into action, you know, to count and to stop for a moment. It tells us in all of our literature, pause. You know, this wonderful literature we have that, you know, pause. You know, I'm finally... This is the most amazing book in the world, you know. Everything is here. As it says in A Vision for You, you know, that alcohol is great and everybody can use it to relieve ease and to make us more comfortable and do that, except for us. Except for you. You, no. You, yes, maybe. We can't. For me, I know. I had to really kind of accept the idea that I had an illness. And once I was able to accept that, it took a long time. I still am fighting and screaming some days. I don't want to be ill. You know, I want to be normal. There's some part of me that keeps on going, not me. You know, not me. And that's just not the truth. So every morning I wake up, and I learned this from my first retreat, and I say this to beginners and to my sponsees when I first have them. I wake up every morning and I say, good morning, God, it's me, Kathleen. I'm an alcoholic and I need your help today. That's the first thing I say in the morning, and I learned that at a year of sobriety from a priest up at Marymount when I went to Maryknoll, when I went to my first retreat. And that's what I do every morning, and I've been doing it for that many years. And it's become a fix in my life. That's what I do. And, you know, I used to wake up every morning, get sick, and light a cigarette. You know, I mean, just to think about how we lived our lives and what we do now. You know, I am immensely grateful that I have this program, you know, this program that has afforded me a life beyond my wildest dreams. It's not easy. I had a job interview today. I'm in my late 60s. I'm in my late 60s, and I went on a job interview today. I don't want to be on a job interview, but I haven't won lottery. It doesn't mean that I don't pray to a God of lottery every Tuesday and every Wednesday. I still do. But I haven't won, so I have to keep working. So I had a job interview. I have a job. It's always better to go on a job interview when you have a job. And it's not nice. It's not great to be interviewed by somebody who's, you know, 25 years younger than you are. And experience, yeah, got it. Check, you know, got it. But... that's what I did today, you know, and last week I was rocking my sponsee who buried a husband, you know, and today I was on a job interview, and this weekend I was with my boyfriend at his crazy fat Greek family's Easter in Massachusetts, and I had a great time. I have no idea what they were talking about, and it didn't matter. It wasn't about me. That's an amazing progress, that it's not about me. There are still days I want it to be about me, but it wasn't about me. It wasn't about me last week with my sponsee. It wasn't about me this weekend with my boyfriend. And, you know, really wasn't about me today at this interview. And you know what? I prayed before I went in there. I prayed when I left. And what was about me today was just praying before I came here today and wanting to be available so that I could be here for alcoholics. Because you know what's important? It's important that we take care of each other. It's important that we show up for each other. It's important that we stay alive. Because as I was talking to somebody today, I think it was Jennifer also, who told me, you know, people are still dying from this disease. If we stay around here, sometimes we hear about it, but sometimes we don't. But people are dying every day from this disease. And fortunately, it's not you or me today. But I got to tell you, it came real close. In the emergency room, it came real close. And I don't talk about that out there. You know, I'm shaking hands and wearing a suit at an interview. People don't know, you know, that I was sleeping in my hallways or that I was in the emergency room with a seizure. You know, they don't know that. And if we don't tell the truth to somebody, that stuff just is in here. So we need each other. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you so much for asking me to speak.